Hi, I'm Larry Gifford. I have Parkinson's disease.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Gifford. I'm Larry Gifford's partner in Parkinson's and in life.
This is When Life Gives You Parkinson's.
So, honey, what do you want to talk about today?
I don't care. What do you want to talk about?
I don't know.
And scene.
In case you couldn't tell, today's episode is going to explore one of the dark corners of Parkinson's, apathy.
Oh, apathy. When one becomes disinterested in people and activities, they become disconnected, unemotional, lethargic. People who are apathetic show little to no goal-oriented behavior. It's like you're 13 again. It's the ultimate, I just don't care.
According to Parkinson Canada, half of all people diagnosed with Parkinson's will experience apathy during their PD journey. That sounds about right. Mm-hmm. Research shows apathy happens more often in men with Parkinson's and that it exacerbates stress on the care partner.
I believe we've talked about it a bit before on the podcast. I've been lost in apathy. I was unmotivated, unwilling to participate in most things, even activities that previously would really excite me. And like most things related to Parkinson's, it adds that extra burden to you, my love. Many say apathy, not hate, is the opposite of love. Apathy is the opposite of love, not hate, because there's no passion to it. There's no emotion to it. It's just emptiness. It's because people with apathy are drained of all emotion, passion, care, and concern.
As a care partner who stared apathy in the face, I can remember feeling frustrated, abandoned, and not only did I have to care about everything, I had to take care of everything. It's a tremendous challenge, but there are paths through, and our guest today will be sharing honest and wise perspective.
Hopefully, by the end of this episode, you'll have a better understanding of how apathy impacts the person with Parkinson's and the family, along with some great ideas on how to move through that fog.
We're going to introduce you to three people. First up is Dr. Bradley McDaniels.
Now, Brad spent 19 years in pharmaceuticals. He had the perfect house in the perfect neighborhood with the perfect wife, but remained unfulfilled.
Made a bunch of money. It was great. But I hated what I did. And it was that thing that I would get up every morning and I hated getting out of bed. And I look back and I spent all of those years just working for nothing. You know, there was no enjoyment. People from the outside would look into my life and go, man, you've got such a great life. And on the inside, I'm like, this is terrible. Then I go back to graduate school, I get my PhD, and I'm making a third of what I used to make. But man, I'd do this for free. Right? And so it is saying, if I'm not happy with where I'm at and what I'm doing and what my purpose is, change it. Begin evaluating. Talk to other people. Find your passion. Find what interests you. Find where you want to spend your time and do more of that. And man, life changes when you do that. I can only imagine you, Larry, with the work with PD Avengers and pushing this group forward, being the impetus for where we're going, the feeling that gives you, that purpose, that satisfaction of, yeah, there's always more to do. There's always stuff at the end of the road. But man, to be able to say, I'm a part of something that's much bigger than me.
Oh yeah.
And that purpose, you can't buy that. You can't put a price tag on that. People would pay big money to have those feelings, to wake up every day and go, hey, it's a good day. I'm going to get to do something I love today. And man, once you find it, you'll never go back.
One of his areas of focus is apathy in Parkinson's.
Brad and I sat down at the PMD Alliance All-In Conference in Washington, D.C. I asked him about his unique approach to understanding apathy.
One of the ways that I'm considering looking at it is through the lens of meaning in life.
Why are we here? What's life all about? Is God really real? Or is there some doubt? Well, tonight we're going to sort it all out. For tonight, it's the meaning of life.
Well, two different definitions. Meaning of life and meaning in life are two different things. Meaning of life is this grand belief about why are we here? Why are humans on the earth? And that's a really tough question because it differs for every person, and really defining that is hard. The real problem is we can't measure that, and so I can't study that. So I'm really more interested in an individual's meaning in life. What is it that makes their life meaningful? How can we improve meaning in life, and what effect does that have on apathy? All of that kind of rolling into quality of life issues. How can we improve people's lives who have Parkinson's disease?
We're also going to hear from Jeff and Kristen Krantz, realtors in New York City.
I was actually the one who noticed the tremors, and so I was the one telling him that he should go get it checked out.
Where was he tremoring?
In his lip.
I've never heard that before. A tremoring lip.
It was whenever he was like speaking, his like chin would start shaking a little bit, like his face would quiver. And so originally we just thought it was a reaction to another medicine that he was on. And then we went in to just go check that out, and we were not thinking Parkinson's at all. So it was a huge blow.
I met Kristen and Jeff at the Michael J. Fox Parkinson's IQ Plus U event in New Jersey. It was the first time they had shared their diagnosis outside their inner circle. Jeff was 39 when he was diagnosed.
I realized something was wrong 15 years ago when I couldn't identify wines. I thought of myself as a sommelier, and I realized that I couldn't tell a Merlot from a Chardonnay. It came as a rock, a real shock to the soul, and it's taken me 5 years to learn to cope with it, and every day is a struggle. I mean, there's no easy way to deal with something like Parkinson's.
It came as a rock.
It shattered me. I think my sense of self, who I was wrapped up in high performance, young guy, family, rocking out in my career. And I think just facing the mortality and the uncertainty of it just shattered my sense of self in the world. I didn't know where I was.
Did you have an idea of what Parkinson's was even?
No, just like everyone else. It was for old Michael people. Michael J. Fox.
Yeah. There was a lot of Googling, obviously, which was a terrible road to go down. It was super scary. I mean, we were, you know, still are so young that we just were like, okay, what does this look like now? Am I going to have to be, like, wheeling him around in a wheelchair in a couple of years? And, like, you know, is he going to be able to take care of himself? You know, it was just so terrifying.
Apathy has played a significant role in Jeff's onset of Parkinson's.
I feel it is losing interest not only in things that used to bring me joy, but having the energy to accomplish basic tasks. On one spectrum, taking out the trash. On the other spectrum, seeing my best friend who's in town for the weekend and not making the dinner. Not because I'm embarrassed of my Parkinson's, but because I just can't deal. And apathy has a way of wrapping itself around you and constricts you into a tighter and tighter ball until you just either say, F this, I gotta fight this, or you just give yourself over to it, and that's not the way to go, I realized.
As a care partner, Kristen was greatly impacted by Jeff's apathy.
I was extremely abandoned. I was very alone. I basically became almost like a single parent for a while. But also I went into a shell. I knew that he was going through a really hard time and I didn't want to burden him even further. So I just kind of shut it off and I became very just shut off and I just didn't want to feel anything. So it was, you know, all the fear and I just pretending like it wasn't happening and just, yeah.
But you were amazing and you took on the responsibilities.
Yeah.
And I probably took liberties, and I never know, this is about the disease itself. You never know if it's the disease doing it or your own way of acting. Like, so am I being lazy because I'm just lazy and I don't want to take out the trash, or is my serotonin levels too low to motivate me to take out the trash? And so there was that constant. But Kristen's always been great.
I wanted to give him the time that he needed to basically what I saw, he went through the 7 stages of grief and it took him a while. And I just wanted to give him the space to do that. I know my husband very well and he's my best friend. I knew that he wasn't going to stay there forever. And tomorrow is always a different day. And hopefully tomorrow is better than today was, you know.
Sometimes it's not better. And that's the hard part.
It's different. It's not the same. It changes.
Yeah, it does change.
Now, Beck, I shared some of our story, one particular moment that sticks in my memory, with Dr. McDaniels. I remember having a conversation with my wife where I was apathetic, and she was like, well, what about that, sis? And what about that? I said, I just don't care. It just doesn't matter anymore. She goes, the man I married cared about everything. Yeah. And so how do care partners deal with, I'm sure they're going through their own cycle of apathy and depression and alongside of having to deal with the person with Parkinson's.
Yeah. I think one of the struggles with that is, you know, many people who hear this will know my mom has PD, and I talk to my mom and my dad regularly about what that looks like. And with my dad, he's like, Brad, what am I supposed to do when she's not doing what she's supposed to be doing? And I said, Dad, you got to love her. Because if he harps at her and he says, you need to be going to exercise, you need to be going to PT, you need to be eating differently, I think that for most people begins to build up resentment. And you begin to go, you know what? I don't care what you say. I'm going to handle this the way I'm going to handle it. And then we begin to have more problems in the relationship, right? Now we've got this 10-pound elephant in the room that is dividing the family. And I think for the care partner, it's important to remember to care for yourself too. Self-care. What are the things that we ask someone with PD to do? Do the same things. You need to be exercising. You need to probably be involved in a support group. Having people be able to help you, other care partners who have gotten through it and can say, here's how we did it. And you learn from that. You begin to get a good sleep regimen. If you need to see a doctor, if you're depressed or you have apathy, go see someone and talk about it. But I think if you're not a healthy care partner, you're not going to be able to help the person whom you're caring for very well. And so I think that we forget that. And I had a conversation with a lady last night who's a care partner, has been one for 36 years. And she was sharing the struggles of feeling like she lost a husband. And now all of the duties at home were on her. And raising her three kids and getting them off to college. And she's like, I didn't sign up for that. But she said, it's what life threw me. And I had to figure it out. And she's been through a lot, like most care partners are. And you're not sure what to do, how to handle this. But she got involved with a really good group of people, care support team, that has really helped her. And so I think that it's important for the care partners to care for themselves.
Dr. McDaniels believes one of the tools that can help pull you from the bonds of apathy is finding meaning in life.
What is it that makes their life meaningful? And the challenge, again, is always with research, is how do we measure these things? And in the social sciences, it's tough. But we've developed a variety of instruments that have been around for the last 40 years looking at meaning in life. And now we've come to looking at, do you have significance? Do you believe that your life matters? Is it coherent? Meaning, does my life that I'm living today somehow fit into this meaning of life belief that I have? And does it make sense? Does your life have purpose? Do you have some goal, some long-term goal that you're seeking in your life? If you have those three things, coherence, significance, and purpose, we would define that as you have meaning in life.
You know, obviously I want him to be able to enjoy like little things in life, like having dinner with friends or, you know, enjoying our daughter's recital or, you know, anything like that. But I don't take it personally. I don't think I ever have. I'm not upset with Jeff when he's going through with it. Like I said, I give him time, and, you know, I've created my own coping mechanisms for it. And I think I have enough empathy probably sometimes for the both of us.
Yeah. But even, like, my wife calls it my bubble, yeah, where I end up just sort of in a daze, like I may not even be doing anything, but I am not present.
I recognize that. And, you know, I try to gauge whether or not this is the moment for me to pull him out or just let him be there and, you know, let him do what he needs to do. And giving him the space has been kind of my main way of trying to show him support and, you know, being here if he needs me. But, it's when I see him going into the space, I'm like, all right, okay, he's there. And then I check in on him in like an hour or two and just see where he's at now, you know.
Sometimes I just want to watch soccer for 5 hours and eat
popcorn and not talk to Kristen because we've spent the last 7 days together.
Which is okay.
How lucky am I to be able to say that? But it's true. Listen, that's the question is one never knows what is speaking. What is it, the disease speaking, or is it your depression speaking, or is it your reaction to the dopamine speaking? It's a big confusion and confusing catch 22 that you're always trying to understand it, but never quite get clarity on it.
It's an interesting question, right? Because there are some pathophysiologic things that happen. Dopamine is related to apathy. And so there are things that happen in the brain, and we're questioning, do those things cause apathy, or is it a behavioral manifestation of the fact that I got diagnosed with Parkinson's disease and now I'm choosing to not engage and just give up? And that's kind of the answer to that question is a yes. It's probably a combination of both. And I think that many behavioral manifestations happen that we get into a rut. And we just say, I've been doing this for so long that it's really hard to break out of that, right? I haven't been going to exercise class. I'm not going to PT. I just don't feel like engaging with people in the community, and there's no motivation to get up off the couch. And the longer we do that, the harder that is to do, right? And so the challenge becomes, how do we break that? What's the first step? Because, right, we know that if you get involved, those things like apathy and depression will diminish. But the challenge is getting that first step out the door to get involved. And I think that's where good group leadership comes in. How do we have some accountability for people? Am I calling you? Am I reaching out to you? Am I inviting you? Am I an individual with PD calling another individual with PD and saying, hey, we need you. We need you as part of our group. Maybe something like that works. Maybe it's going and finding this meaning, having someone sit down with you and developing an intervention that makes finding meaning in life fairly simple. And that's the ultimate goal that me and some people I work with are trying to figure out.
Wait, did you hear what you just said? Finding your purpose in life is simple.
It is when you really get down to it, right? Because what happens is you begin to look at the things that bring value to you. Maybe it's spirituality, maybe it's relationships, maybe it's nature, whatever it is. You find something that you go, man, I love that. The way to find meaning is do more of that. Get involved, dig into that, and have that be part of what you do. And it's amazing how all of a sudden now you've got this thing that's out there that you seek all the time. And it takes your eyes off of my problems, me, struggle, onto this thing that, man, I love that, and I'm really into that. And that's really what purpose is, right? You find that thing, and you want to go after it with all you've got. And then all of a sudden, life becomes about that and not about my problems.
It's a constant struggle and a balancing act of choosing to emerge from the safe, quote unquote, safe cocoon that you could stay in and just find yourself in 20 years later, if you haven't emerged, being the same person you were 20 years ago. I want to grow. I want to experience life. And so it takes effort and it takes emotional courage to just do things like I'm doing now. I mean, speaking to you is very hard, and but I'm allowing myself to move past the sort of don't do this, don't do this. It's this is so sad. To hey, this is sad, but someone might benefit from this.
Jeff told me that he didn't pull himself out of apathy. Eventually, he sought professional help.
I saw a guy who was a brilliant Jungian psychologist, Buddhist in New York. You know, as psychologists do, they don't say anything until you say something. And so I said, I just started laughing, and I said, I don't know what I'm doing here. And he said, well, why don't you start with the fact that you're in an effing room with a human being that you haven't made eye contact with for a start. And that was Zen Buddhism slapping the rod on the student, saying, be aware of where you are. It's not just inside of you. There's things in front of you that you can engage in.
So many of us are raised up, especially men. You can do this. Just pull your bootstraps up and get it done.
Muscle through.
Yeah. And so we get to a place in life where we need to be vulnerable, and we don't want to be. And we need to receive help. but we still have that part of us that's prideful, that says, I can manage this. I don't want to put that on them. But just like paying a compliment, the person who's giving the help is receiving a blessing by doing that. And so who am I to take that blessing from them when they're wanting to help me with a problem, right? And I think so many things in life, it's that shift. It's just that little bit of shift in perspective, right? I've got two pair of glasses that I can look at this problem through. Each one focuses on something different. And when I do that, my attitude can change. And, you know, we do need help and we do need more leaders who are stepping up, who are demonstrating those principles, who are talking about, this is the help that I received because I needed it. And it's okay. You're going to come into things in your life, challenges with your Parkinson's, that you're going to need someone to step in and help you with that situation. Receive it.
You have to be open for support from other people. You know, until you allow yourself to be supported, you can't. You're just struggling.
And also remember to be there when someone else needs it, right? It's that pay it forward thing. We help each other when we can. We do what we can. But we reach times where we go, I'm just spent. I've got nothing left. And we need that person who steps in and goes, I got you. I got you. I will take care of this for you. Let you work through what you need to work through. A few days later, you're back up. Now you're ready to give again. And it's kind of that process, I believe.
Mindfulness, being in the moment, figuring out what's really important in life, and having a great care team. It's important to remember that the same tools that apply to Jeff here apply to his care partner, Kristen.
We need to kind of enjoy now and the moments that we have now and not so much like, where are we getting to next? And it shifts your focus and it even shifts your goals of what you want out of life. I mean, prior to the diagnosis, we were, you know, on this career path and, you know, being like really, you know, awesome, cool, top this, top that. And it just doesn't seem like necessarily the main focus anymore. You know, it's we want to enjoy life and enjoy each other.
You know, it can be tricky to know when someone is ready to find new purpose in life, when they're ready to re-engage. So how do you know when someone is ready to move through and figure out what's next?
That's always the tough thing is, when is someone ready? When they are, right? I mean, and that's not a helpful answer, but it's the truth. You know, it's allowing someone to go through that grieving process because that's what it is. Getting a chronic diagnosis is similar to Elizabeth Kubler-Ross when she talked about the stages of death and dying, right? That we go through these emotional reactions and it's not a linear process necessarily. It's denial today and I have anger tomorrow. And it goes back and forth. And sometimes I may be great for 2 weeks and then I revert back to this anger. And it's allowing people to process that. But I think that's done so well in community with other people who have processed it already. It's being around other people who can give you hope, who can give you optimism, who can give you a sense of it's still okay. You're still okay. And we'll work through this and we're here with you. And that's the value I see in things like these conferences that we have and support groups and being involved and not trying to handle it alone, right? We have our pride and we want to go, I can handle this. Sure, you probably can, but there's a much better way.
I asked Dr. McDaniels if it's possible that somebody may have a false sense of their purpose in life.
Yeah, I think they can. I think that you could see it in our society now that your purpose could say, my purpose is to provide really well for my family. So my job is to make as much money as I can. That's my purpose. I guess for some that could be their purpose. I don't know that it really fits the definition of something that I'm seeking that's going to make my life better. Is it really internally going to make you a better person, make you feel relaxed and just kind of that zen, right? That everything's good. I don't know. I mean, I'm not, who am I to say? But I believe it happens. I really do. I think that you get locked into something and that's just who you are and that's just what you do. And you keep a career your whole life and maybe you didn't really like it and you get done, you retire And then you really find your purpose. And your purpose could be being a grandpa, right? You retire and you've got grandkids, and I'm pouring everything into that. And man, I love that. And you go, man, why did I wait 35 years going through the workforce? And now I'm just finding this thing that makes me exceedingly happy. And it's unfortunate, right? That some have to wait that long. But the great thing is you don't. You can fix it at any time if you're willing to take that step.
It reminds me of the first time you think you're in love.
Yeah.
And then later in life, you fall in love and you realize you were never in love before.
Yeah, it's a great point, right? I think that part of living a full life, part of having a purposeful life is, number one, paying attention. Paying attention to what's going on around us. Paying attention to the things that make me feel good. And for the things that I have a visceral reaction to that make me struggle. And how can I do less of those things that give me that visceral reaction? Sometimes we can't change them, you know? I love what I do at University of North Texas. There are things there that I have a visceral reaction to.
Paperwork. Right?
You know, there's just stuff that's a requirement of the job. And those things are okay. But if that becomes greater than the positives, it's time for me to go. It's just not working anymore. It's not my place, my purpose. Maybe the purpose is still the same. It's just not here. Maybe somewhere else. And maybe the purpose shifts. I don't know. But I think part of it is really feeling within us how we're doing in these areas of our lives that we believe is part of our purpose. How does it make me feel? Am I being fulfilled with that?
Yeah, and I think a lot of times it's the circumstance of life changes.
Sometimes even without a circumstantial change, we just mature. We begin to understand as adults what life is like, right? When you're 25, you're figuring it out. I don't know what the work world is like, what's it supposed to be. By the time you're 40, you kind of got it. You kind of like, yeah, I know what this is about. And I think I began to reevaluate what was important and what it was that I wanted out of life. And, you know, I really wanted a place where I enjoyed getting out of bed and going to my work. And, you know, that took time to figure that out. You know, do I really want to go back to school and get a PhD at 42? But I found that I loved school as an adult. Nobody that knew me as an undergrad back in 91 would have said, that guy's going to go back and get a PhD, because I was playing ball. I didn't care about school. But it's funny, right? Because I spent my whole life as an athlete thinking that was what I was going to do. I was going to play pro ball. That's what everyone had said. And so when I graduated and the draft happened and it didn't work out, everything changed. That was my identity. That was my purpose. Now all of a sudden that's vanished. And who am I? And, you know, I ask my students that. I say, what a great question to ask one of your clients is, who are you? Because most of us, when we get asked that question, we say, well, I'm a son, I'm a father, I host a podcast, whatever. Those are things you do. That's not who you are. It's a very different question. And it's a deep question to get into conversation about, who are you in here, in your heart? Who's the guy inside behind the veil? And that's the stuff that matters. And sometimes you don't know. I think that there are times that you go through life and you've lost who you are. But it's a great opportunity to rediscover, or maybe discover for the first time, who you really are on the inside. And can I be this person that I think I want to be?
What was the catalyst for you? What was the thing that made you go, oh yeah, I'm not doing what I want to do?
You know, I think that every year I was in pharma was a struggle. And it just kept getting more and more. I was traveling all the time. I was on the road. I had a daughter in 2001 and was away. And it was just a trudge. And then mom got diagnosed with Parkinson's. And I thought, you know, what can I do to help her? And maybe this is God's way of saying, I'm giving you an out. And so I thought about it, and I thought, you know, at 42, I could go back and be a neurologist, but that's a long road. you know?
It's like 16 years.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know about that. And so I serendipitously fell into graduate school and fell in love and loved research and got to meet some great people. You know, I realized that the world is full of people in every area that are passionate about what they do. And I've been able to get connected to some of those people. And once I found that, everything changed. It was really almost like once I stepped into graduate school and I said, all right, here's where I am today in the pharma world. 6 weeks, I'm going to be in grad school. How's this going to go? I don't know, right? It's a big leap.
What's that conversation like with your wife?
Fortunately, I'm on a second marriage.
And because of that?
Partially. But she's a wonderful supporter. And she had been a stay-at-home mom in her previous marriage and never had worked. And she said, we'll figure this out. I'm going to go get a job. You go back and do what you want to do. And what a support system.
That's great.
Right? That's the family, right? That's stepping up, and it's like the things that your wife does for you, the things that caregivers all do for the individual with PD is, I'm going to do the work I need to do so that you can grow, you can recover, you can take that next step, you can find your purpose, maybe for the first time in your life now. I would be certain that there are a great number of people with PD who are active in the community who never had a purpose before PD. All of a sudden they got it, they got involved, they love it, and the spirit inside of them just wells out. You can see it. I mean, you hang around enough people. It's contagious when you're around people who are just, man, I love what I do. And I think that there's that catharsis almost that happens within people, that you've gone through this struggle, and it's the flourishing through suffering. Went through the suffering, and now you go from a caterpillar to a butterfly. And all of a sudden, you're flying, and everything looks different, and my outlook is different. And people go, who are you? That's not the guy that I used to know. Yeah. I got PD. I thought that was a death sentence, right? Before you get PD, we all have an idea of what it is. It's the old guy, the picture.
Yeah.
The old guy hunched over with a cane, and life sucks. Yeah, not always that way. Not great, but there are different walks, right?
All right, as we wrap up, I want you to give recommendations of three things people should seek out and read.
You know, as a meaning in life guy, Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning, I think is an essential read for anybody who's going through suffering of any kind. I think hearing his story about a guy that survived Nazi concentration camps and came out better, example of post-traumatic growth, which can be a whole nother talk at some point. But I think that's one. I think there's one of the most powerful books that I've read is called The Spirituality of Imperfection. Elizabeth Gertz, I think, is the last name of the author. I read that 20 years ago, and I've probably read it four times. It's an allegorical story about life and how things happen and how we struggle and how our perceptions can be different. Meaningful book. And I think if we want to talk about the Parkinson's world, certainly the ending Parkinson's disease, I think listening to podcasts, listening to yours, Heather Kennedy, the two mics. I mean, we've got a bunch of podcasts of people who are talking about real world stuff. If you don't have a support group that you can get involved in, golly, at least do that, to be able to hear stories that are motivating, that can get you out of yourself and give you hope and a sense of purpose, hopefully, down the road. And I would encourage people to reach out. Reach out to you, Larry, or other people whom you hear on shows. You know, we're a family. Those in the Parkinson's world are part of a family. I can tell you my experience as a young researcher in tenure, the experiences that I've had reaching out to people have been great. Very few times have I not received an email back or not received I'd be more than happy to talk to you. Let's set up a time. I think people are afraid to do that. They think I don't have anything to have a conversation about, or that's Larry. He's on, he does his podcast and he's PD Avengers. He doesn't have time for me. How do you know?
Yeah.
Right? Reach out. What I know about you is you are more than happy to have a conversation with someone who's struggling with Parkinson's disease and say, let me tell you my story. And then that helps. So if that's the last piece of encouragement I can give, if you find someone you resonate with, reach out to them. Let's have a phone call. Let's have a Zoom. If you live in the same area, let's have a coffee and let's sit down and chat and see if you can get some stuff from them, maybe that helps you. And then you're the next Larry Gifford or Heather Kennedy or Gavin Mogan or whomever it is. You're the person who steps up and now people are calling you.
Yeah.
What a great way to cascade this whole thing.
Right. Hey, I really appreciate you.
Yeah, man. Anytime, brother. Good talking with you.
Good talking to you.
I find joy in making people laugh. I find joy in loving my wife and my child. I find joy in watching soccer. And I find joy in discovering that I'm not defined by one thing, and that not the thing that life is so beautiful, but that life is kind of a trip. And I've decided that I'm not going to look for an exit anymore off the highway. It's just sort of interesting shit happens along the way.
I'm curious what tools they rely upon the most to deal with Parkinson's and these periods of apathy.
Jeffrey and I would cope a lot with it with using a sense of humor and being able to laugh about certain situations.
Well, Parkinson's is funny.
I mean,
oh, it's hilarious.
It's so funny. But, you know, things like, which I still, after all these years, still do, I'm always like, oh, smell my new perfume, or like, what is this smell? Or can you smell that? Or smell how good this is. And Jeffrey's always like, still can't smell, still
I'm
there.
It's a blessing. It's a blessing for me because I never know when it's pumpkin spice season. So I get to avoid that.
All kidding aside, the experience with Parkinson's and apathy has changed their life goals.
I want to just enjoy the world and enjoy the world with Jeff at my side.
I had a narrow focus before. It was career, family, and me, and now my focus is much wider. It's helping other people. It's all the things we've talked about.
I love Kristen and Jeff, and I'm grateful to them for sharing so courageously a slice of their experience and a bit of what they've learned. If you or someone you know is experiencing apathy, please consult your doctor or movement disorder specialist. There are medications that can help, including dopamine agonists. These medications stimulate the dopamine receptor and may reduce apathy.
Some things you can do to cope with apathy is push yourself to get out and spend time with friends, even if you don't feel like it. Do things you used to love, like maybe going to concerts or watching movies or playing Lego or whatever it is that you used to love to do. Take a writing, music, or art therapy class, which is shown to help with apathy. Try to exercise every day. Break the big tasks into smaller ones so there's a sense of accomplishment. We have a board in our kitchen where we have a list of things for me to do. And every time I get to do a check mark, it feels like I've actually accomplished something.
Well, and I've recently talked with some other care partners who use whiteboards and other things like that, and it actually helps.
Yeah, no, it's really good. Reward yourself whenever you finish an activity. Yay, me! Get plenty of sleep each night, which is easier said than done. And join a support group or get involved, get in touch with the Parkinson's community. And you know, once you're within the milieu of the community, they sweep you up and there's lots of love there. And support.
Connection.
Yeah, it's important.
Apathy often has a greater impact on care partners and families than on their person with Parkinson's. And as a group, care partners report feeling frustrated with the person they care for. It is not uncommon to feel they are working harder than the person with Parkinson's.
Do you relate to that?
I do. Your apathy certainly affects our family, but it's situational. Engagement in the Parkinson's community, advocacy, PD Avengers, etc. Those things offer you a great sense of purpose, and you have a lot more motivation than you did closer to diagnosis. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. But you can be apathetic about other things at times, including family activities and goings-on, things around the house, when Henry has needs, when people are talking about things. It can be hard, more difficult for you to notice what's going on around you and then get motivated to engage and then maybe go do something.
So a couple things come to mind. Number one, is I know there's been times where you're like, hey, let's go on a hike. And I'm like, oh, that sounds horrible. But I compromise and I force myself to get out of the house to go watch the ducks while you go on a hike.
Right. So you're still getting outside and getting the benefit of outside and a little bit of a walk. And then I get the exercise that I'm craving. And right, everybody kind of gets what they need. We've figured out some small ways to do that.
And the other thing Dr. McDaniels was talking about, you know, finding purpose in your life. And that's just a matter of finding out what fills your cup. Like what is it that you just, it doesn't even feel like work. It doesn't feel like, it just makes you happy.
Well, and I really liked that he kept it small. It doesn't have to be this grand purpose or this large goal. It can just be embracing the things that bring you joy and that you can still do physically and emotionally, spending time in nature, making that part of it, cleaning up a beach that you walk to on a regular basis every week. There are just ways that you can kind of bring just little bits of purpose that keep you enthusiastic about remaining engaged in the world.
Maybe it's you're really good at origami and you create these little things and you just give them to people and it makes you feel good because you've given them something that they can't do on their own.
When you were first diagnosed, you met one of the first people you met from the Parkinson's community was a gentleman who painted canes.
Yeah, so he'd find find sticks in the woods and sand them down and then paint them crazy colors.
Right. And that was one of the couple of things that he did. He's like, I can't get motivated to do a lot of things anymore, but I've always been a really active person. But here are the two or three things that really fill my cup these days. And one of them is finding these sticks and turning them into walking sticks and then giving them away. He never sold anything. He just would give them away and people were pleased as punch. And you still have one.
I have two. Yeah.
It was purple with polka dots and right.
I loved it.
And it brought in purpose.
Yeah, that's great.
There are some things that care partners can keep in mind when coping with their person with Parkinson's apathy. I found this really interesting. It's important to ask the person with Parkinson's how they are feeling and check in with them because what looks like apathy may be a symptom of another condition that could benefit from medical attention. It may not simply be part of the Parkinson's. It may be something related to the Parkinson's, but it may also be something that can be addressed with medical attention or with other changes.
Well, and apathy is one of those things that we're constantly asked about. Like, how do I motivate my person with Parkinson's? How do I get them out of the house? How do I get them exercising?
I hear that all the time. It's like, this is really great advice to get my person with Parkinson's to exercise and make sure that they're active and make sure they're connected with the community. But then the question always becomes, but every time I suggest it to my person with Parkinson's, they say no, they don't want to. How do I get them motivated? And I have never been part of a webinar or participated in anything or heard any expert give a really good answer to that. I don't know that there is a good answer. So I think it's largely situational, as with your apathy is largely situational. How we motivate you to move through that apathy and maybe re-engage and see if it is something that you might eventually enjoy or ultimately be glad that you did is different based on the day, based on what symptoms you're having, based on whether you're off or on, what's the weather like outside. I mean, all of these things are very situational. So I suppose it's just being aware that apathy can affect you and the people around you more than we may be previously aware. And then checking in that there's not something else going on. And if it's not, then maybe figuring out this is how we can address it today. And maybe saying, you know what, we just let him be in his bubble and do what he needs to do and have some quiet time today rather than the encouragement.
You've been listening to When Life Gives You Parkinson's.
A giant thank you to Dr. Bradley McDaniels, to Jeff Krantz, and Kristen Krantz.
Story producer is Dylan Velazquez, sound design by Greg Schott.
The presenting partner is Parkinson Canada, where people with Parkinson's are at the center of everything they do. Parkinson Canada funds critical research, provides information and support, increases awareness, and advocates for improved healthcare outcomes for people with Parkinson's across Canada. Learn more at parkinson.ca.
Thanks also to our promotional partners, the World Parkinson Congress 2023, That is in July the 4th through 7th next year in Barcelona, Spain. Go to WPC2023.org right now. Abstract submissions are open, registration's open, housing open, travel grant applications are open. Just get over there and start signing up.
PD Avengers, a global alliance of people with Parkinson's, partners, and friends united to the cause of ending Parkinson's disease. We need you. Join now at pdavengers.com.
The Michael J. Fox Foundation's Parkinson's IQ Plus U free in-person live event coming to the Bay Area in December. It's designed to empower people with Parkinson's and their partners to manage the disease and learn about the latest research. Sign up today at michaeljfox.org/PDIQ.
Spotlight YOPD, one of the only organizations in the world with the singular focus of raising awareness of young onset Parkinson's disease. SpotlightYOPD.org.
And let me just tell you, you have influence in your friends and your family. And so when you say you should listen to this podcast, it's so great, they're going to listen to you. So I'm going to ask you to do that for one or two or three people. Just tell them about the podcast, because your personal recommendation means a lot more than me just saying it here on the podcast.
And don't forget to subscribe.
Oh, that's right. Subscribe. Push that little button. It's easy.
Keep positive.
Keep exercising.
Keep listening.
We'll talk to you next time.
Would you walk us through a typical day for you?
Yeah. Great. Well, I generally come in at least 15 minutes late. I use the side door. That way Lumberg can't see me. And after that, I just sort of space out for about an hour.
Space out?
Yeah. I just stare at my desk. But it looks like I'm working. I do that for probably another hour after lunch, too. I'd say in a given week, I probably only do about 15 minutes of real, actual work. The thing is, Bob, it's not that I'm lazy. It's that I just don't care.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.